O my Lord, Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudev.
O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge into the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representation of water seen in fire, or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. I heard many years ago that Prabhupada said that when he began to write this Bhagavatam, he wasn't sure if he would complete the entirety of the work. So therefore, he put everything within the first canto. And he said that when he began the first canto, he wasn't sure that he would complete the first canto even. After all, he was quite elderly when he began it. So he put everything within the first three verses and their purports. And also, as I heard this story, he put everything within the first verse and purport as well. So this verse and purport is very, it's actually quite wonderful. And each time I did read it, I found it even more so. This verse itself, beginning with Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and then going on to Janmad Yasyataha. This verse is Srila Vyasadeva's definition of the Absolute Truth. And to this absolute truth, Srila Vyasadeva offers his respectful obeisances and he begins meditating upon it. And he begins by saying, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is the offering of obeisances to the absolute truth, saying, as Prabhupada opens his purport by saying, obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Vasudev directly indicates Lord Sri Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. So practically speaking, the first thing that Srila Prabhupada says is that the absolute truth, which by definition is that substance that nothing is different from, that absolute truth is a person. And that person, because Vasudev means the all-pervading absolute truth, and that person who is Vasudev is the son of Vasudev in Devaki. And that is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. And that person who is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so wonderful inconceivably wonderful. And this verse very wonderfully describes that person and his characteristics. So the first thing, as we just mentioned, is this obeisances unto Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Obeisances to the Bhagavat, the one who possesses, Bhagavan, the one who possesses all opulences, the absolute truth, who is known as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, the son of Nanda and Yasoda, who is Krishna. Because that is ultimately what every conditioned soul must do if he wishes to stop being a conditioned soul. We have to offer our obeisances to Krishna. We have to come to the platform where we give up our independence from Krishna. There is one very interesting part which we're sort of towards the end of Prabhupada's purport, when he says that Krishna demands that we surrender unto him because he's the absolute truth. Why? What does it mean that Krishna demands that we surrender unto him? We see that if he's the supreme, all-powerful personality of Godhead, and he makes a demand, it would seem that no living entity, after all, we are so tiny and insignificant, how can a living entity avoid surrendering if Krishna is making that demand? And yet, we see so many living entities have very carefully avoided surrendering to Krishna. So does that mean that Krishna's demand is not being followed? They've stood up and said, no, I'm not going to do it. You have your demand, but I have my own needs. I'm not going to do it. No! When Krishna makes a demand, when he demands surrender, that means that every single living entity, from the smallest to the greatest, must follow that demand. That means that every living entity in this world is surrendering to Krishna because it is Krishna's desire. And it is unavoidable that we surrender to Krishna. We either surrender with great love, willingly, happily, in a mood of devotion, or we surrender indirectly to Krishna's illusory energy. And we are forced to follow the dictates of the three modes of material nature. We are forced into a situation where we must die, not one time, but again and again and again. After taking birth and growing old and diseased, we must die. We are forced into doing so many things that no one has a desire to do. We are forced to work so hard. So this is the product of the indirect surrender. It is Krishna's demand that we surrender. And the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to reveal that personality of Godhead in such a way that we want to change from this indirect, involuntary surrender under the illusion that we are independent. We want to change from that side to the other side, where we say, oh Krishna, from this day forward I am yours. And in this way develop our love for Krishna, our love and faith and devotion to Krishna. This is what the Bhagavatam will do. The essence, or the smiling face of the Bhagavatam, is the Bhagavatam's 10th canto. And as Prabhupada explains in the purport, that is the manifestation, the 10th canto is the manifestation of the activities of the personality of Godhead, because Krishna has two sets of activities. He has activities manifested by his material energy, and which is inferior, And he has activities manifest by his spiritual energy in the spiritual world. And the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam describes those activities that he personally manifests in that spiritual realm, which is free. Dhamna svena sada narastaku kam. It is completely free from any of the inebrieties of the qualities of the faults that are contained in the activities of the material world. That means that until we are free from those material qualities and material tinges, we cannot go to that place. So the Bhagavatam will gradually instruct us and purify us to remove those inferior qualities, to situate us in goodness, so that we can make further progress still and attain devotion, so that we can go to that place, and therefore the Gayatri Mantra is evoked. In his purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada basically goes over, the purport is composed basically or primarily of explanations of the different phrases that this verse connotes. So it begins with Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That's how the verse begins, and Prabhupada in his purport begins with that also. Obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudev. Who is Krishna? Because it is actually inconceivable for a conditioned soul how that person, or how that absolute truth, who is controlling everything, who is everywhere, who not one fragment of anything exists or operates outside of his potency. It is inconceivable to a conditioned soul, to anyone, how that absolute truth can be a person. What to speak of his activities that are delineated in the 10th canto, wandering through the fields of Vrindavan as a cowherd boy. And yet, he is the controller, the maintainer, the destroyer even. So no one can understand this. But no one also can say that Krishna cannot do this if he so desires. He has a personality. Everyone in this world, everything that is done in this world is done with a person, an individual behind it. Every living entity, including a little bug, he is an individual. The scientists who put the spaceships and in orbit, they are individuals. They have intelligence, they have characteristics, they have personality. How is it? Why should it be that the origin of everything won't similarly have intelligence, but the greatest intelligence? And why won't he have personality and individuality? Personality means individuality. That means he is an individual, a person. As we are people, as everyone is a person. Why would it be that the Supreme would be the only one who doesn't have individuality and personality? So he is a person. He is an individual. And he's the most wonderful person. That is what Krishna means. The supreme, all-attractive individual. That is what Bhagavan means. The one who possesses everything that attracts a living entity within this world. We're attracted to so many things. And all of those things that we are attracted to, Krishna possesses an ocean of those qualities. We are attracted to a drop, and Krishna possesses an ocean. So the Bhagavatam will introduce us to Krishna and His personality and His qualities to attract us from this rotten and rotting material world to that eternal abode, which is beyond the influence of the modes of material nature, beyond the influence of time. So we should go. We should go there. We should go on this wonderful journey through the Bhagavatam and end up at the lotus feet of Krishna in devotional service. So the verse continues, Janmadyasyataha. So Prabhupada quotes this on so many occasions to show that the Absolute Truth, or Krishna, the Absolute Truth, is that substance, Adhaya Jnana. He is that substance, that tattva, that every other substance that we see and perceive, it emanates from Him. That is the Absolute Truth. Nothing is foreign or alien or separate from Him. It is not that He can have a competitor. It is not that the Absolute Truth can have someone who escapes His jurisdiction and is a rebel. It is not that the Absolute Truth doesn't include everything. One time Prabhupada was asked if God is love, and Prabhupada said yes, and He's also hate. He's everything. Everything. There is nothing in existence that does not emanate from Him. That is the meaning of the Absolute Truth. And therefore, part of Srila Vyasadeva's definition is Janmadyasyataha, that He is that one from whom everything else emanates. Everything else emanates. But yet, we don't see that. We don't see that point. Why? This will be explained later in the verse. So, janmad yasyataha anvayad itaras chateshu abhigya. This means that the Absolute Truth, not only is the Absolute Truth that substance from which everything else emanates, but He Himself has no source. The Absolute Truth Himself has no source or emanate or anything else that it emanated from. It is the origin of all. And anvayad itaras chateshu abhigya. Abhigya means that He knows everything. He knows what each and every one of us are thinking at this moment and at every moment. Whether we surrender to Him or we don't surrender to Him, He knows everything. He knows everything. Anvayad itaras means directly and indirectly. What is an example of directly and indirectly, how He knows everything? We directly and indirectly know something that happens to our body. But I can indirectly know, say if you go like this to yourself, I can indirectly know what you did. But you directly experience it, plus you see yourself doing it, so you indirectly experience it as well. So because everything that exists in one sense, the spiritual world and the material world, has come from Krishna, is part of Krishna. It is part of Him. It is part of His body in that sense. the totality of existence is part of His body. And just as we are directly and indirectly conscious of what happens to our body, Krishna is directly and indirectly conscious of everything in existence. Everything He experiences, because this is described also regarding the material world in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how he explains that everything, mama angsa tejo sambhava, that everything in existence is sitting upon one fragment of me, the Supersoul. So everything is sitting on Krishna, and Krishna is everything. So He's conscious directly, He sees it happening, He knows it's happening, and He experiences it. This is the meaning of anvayad itaras teteshu, abhigya. Abhigya means that He's all omniscient, all-knowing. And then He's swarat. Swarat means He is completely independent. This is the meaning of the absolute truth, that there are relative truths and then there are absolute truths. Truth. The relative truths, they don't exist. They are relative. They don't exist always. They are sometimes true and they are sometimes not true. And they're dependent on something else to be for their truth. They are dependent on a particular aspect of time. Just like we can say that there is a that the garden is very beautiful with its flowers blooming, with its reddish, yellow and white flowers, fragrant flowers blooming. And actually when you walk down the path, it is so fragrant. So that, is that true? It's certainly true. But it is not absolutely true, because 5 months ago, in a different segment of time, it wasn't true. The garden wasn't blooming. And it wasn't fragrant. And 20 years from now, who knows? But Krishna, and the fact that He is the absolute truth, this is always true, past, present, and future. And as the relative truths depend on the absolute truth, every other thing in this material world, in the spiritual world, everything depends upon Him. And He doesn't depend on anyone. He is swarat, independent. He is free. He is completely free. And every other aspect in existence is dependent upon Him, not free. This is the meaning of the absolute truth, abhigya swarat. And it is known in the Vedic culture that Lord Brahma is the origin of the universe. But tene Brahma, ya riddaya, ya adikavaye. But it was Krishna who instructed Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma, as we will read in the second canto and in the third canto, he, although He is the creator of everything and He is the best of creators, He was bewildered and He could not create until Krishna gave them the inspiration to create. So Brahma created, so many created, Michelangelo created, Leonardo da Vinci created, so many people create big things, small things, a carpenter creates, an ant creates. But as Lord Brahma was dependent for His creation upon Krishna, every living entity is dependent on Krishna for their creations. Lord Brahma is the original creator in this material world, and every subsequent creator is also dependent upon him, upon Krishna. And then, Muyanti Yatsuraya. Even, it is by him only that even the suras, or the greatest of the demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are put in illusion. What to speak of us, tiny, insignificant, unpowerful living entities. That illusion that separates us from Krishna is also not independent from Krishna. Muyanti Yatsuraya. And then there are some examples of this illusion. Tejo varim ridam yatav inimayo. How sometimes when we look at fire, we see water within the fire. Or sometimes we see land upon the water, or sometimes we see water upon land. Sometimes when if we're driving in a very hot place on the road, you see water above the road. Or so many living entities, animals and human beings are walking in the desert and they see some water as if there's water there, some mirage of water. So the illusion that something exists where it truly does not exist is not independent of the Absolute Truth. In fact, it is due to the reality of the Absolute Truth, due to the true existence of water somewhere, that we can perceive water where it is not. It is due to the reality of the dealings in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, that we misconstrue the material world as something permanent and as something wonderful, an illusion. It is due to reality that illusion exists. This is also described later in the Bhagavatam, and Jiva Goswami describes this point, I believe, in Bhagavat Sandarbha. We may mistake a rope for a snake, but just the fact that we are thinking this rope is a snake, that means a rope does exist somewhere, and similarly a snake does exist somewhere, because we wouldn't have the capacity to imagine incorrectly that the rope was a snake if there was no such thing in existence as a snake. Just the fact that that concept exists shows that it exists somewhere, even though the illusion is thinking it is over here when it is not there. We are thinking the rope is a snake and the rope is not a snake, but that means that the rope exists and the snake exists somewhere else. So similarly, we experience so many things in the material world in an illusory way. We are seeking health, wealth, happiness, love, eternity, security, all these wonderful concepts, peace, true, deep, meaningful relationships. We are seeking these things in an illusory way in the place where they don't exist. We are trying to take the concept which exists in the spiritual world and implant those, impose those where they don't exist in the material world, where they can't exist. And this specifically is our illusion. This is specifically our illusion. We are taking something that is real, that we are all longing for, which really does indicate that the soul has these tendencies naturally within it, because every living entity is longing for the same things, regardless of their culture, regardless of their personality, regardless of their status in life. So it is the soul that is longing for these things. It is the soul
But in illusion, we are taking those things and looking, which are real, and looking for them where they do not exist in the world of matter. And this illusion, Muyanti Atsuraya, is created also by the Lord, and that is the absolute truth. It is not that there is something beyond him, that the souls have rebelled and they have escaped his jurisdiction and have set up a rebel camp in the material world. It is not like that at all. Tejo vare medam yata vinamayo. And this yatra trisava amrisha. Because of this, the reality of the spiritual world, that which exists in Trisaga, in the three worlds of the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems, it appears factual due to the illusion. Amrisha, it appears factual, although it is not. Everything appears eternal, but it is not. And then, again, going to the same point, dhamna svena sada. There is another reality where Krishna exists, dhamna, dham, and Krishna's dham, which is narasta kuhakam. It is differentiated from the world of illusion by the absence of illusion. Narasta kuhukam. In that place, the Dham, the eternal abode of Goloka Vrindavan of Vaikuntha, that place where Krishna resides directly performing his pastimes, which are specifically described in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, that is the place where Krishna resides. Narasta kuhukam, which is completely absent. Illusion is completely absent from that place. So that means, as long as we keep ourselves, as long as there is even a pinch of illusion attached to us, we cannot go there. Because there is no illusion allowed in the spiritual world. They cannot enter. So if we have any illusory attachment, we cannot go there. We have to stay here. Narasta kuhukam. And then Srila Vyasadeva ends this verse by saying satyam param. So satyam means what? Truth. And param means supreme truth. And dhimahi means I meditate. So this is the meditation upon the Supreme Absolute Truth. Srila Jiva Goswami points out in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, in the second chapter, that satyam doesn't only mean the Absolute Truth. It means specifically Krishna, who is the Absolute Truth. When the demigods in the second chapter of the 10th canto, which is known as Garbha Stuti, the prayers that the demigods offer to the womb, because Krishna is situated within that womb, the first thing they say in their prayers is this verse that I'll now read, and it's to Krishna specifically. So when they're offering their prayers to Krishna, they're calling him Satyam, and they use this word Satya to indicate directly Krishna so many times. Listen to this wonderful verse. Satyavratam satya param trisatyam satyasya yonim hitam cha satye satyasya satyam vita satya netram satyatmakam tam saranam prapana. So satyavratam, that means that his that Krishna is the one who is Satyavrata, which means that his vow, when he makes a promise, it must come true. So therefore his name is Satya, because all his promises come true. And of course the promises that the devotees like to hear about are Kaunteya Patijani Yiname Bhakta Panashiti Ananyasintyantamam. So many wonderful promises that Krishna makes. Declare it boldly, my devotee will never perish. Because the devotees, the aspiring devotees, need to remember how Krishna is Satyavrata, to increase their courage to fully depend upon him. Because in this material world, we see this in the story of Dhruva Maharaj later on, after he becomes the great devotee Dhruva Maharaj, he's fighting with the yakshas, Kuvera's yakshas, and they throw so many mystic, fearful, mystic, horrible weapons and illusions upon him. Mountains rain upon him, snakes rain upon him. So terrifying. And actually this is the nature of the material world. Oh, we can say, oh, it's all illusion, but it's not illusion in the sense that it's not terrifying. It's illusion in the sense that it's temporary. Death is illusory, but it's terrifying. Wars, the sufferings, the hunger, the cruelty, the diseases, these things are illusory, but they're terrifying. The heartbreaks, the criminal activities that go on are terrifying. So those things, those type of things also come from Krishna, because he is Janmadyasyataha. And therefore, for the non-devotees, they come to give them real terror. You want to, so you think you're wonderful? You want to be independent? I am Surat. And you want to be Surat? Even though you're completely dependent in every moment? Okay, have some terror. Terrorism. This is the name of the game in the material. It's all terrorism. And terrorism comes from the word terrible. It's terrible and terrifying. And the non-devotees are very determined. I will never surrender. I don't care what. I will proudly die again and again and again. And the devotees, they see Krishna's hand in that, and they just turn to him and say, Krishna, Krishna. Therefore, Sharanam Prapanam. I turn to you for protection. Kindly, the demigods say. Even though they're demigods, they're saying, oh, Krishna, Sharanam, I surrender to you, Prapanam, you please, that you are the sole object of my shelter. Satya Param, Param Satyam. This is the second time in this verse. Krishna is called the Absolute Truth. Param Satyam, and here's Satya Param. And three satyam, he's true, everything that he says and is true in all three phases of time, past, present, and the future. Something may be a power, we may find someone in this material world who is a powerful shelter now, but in 10 years he may be dead, and where will our shelter be? But Krishna is three satyam. His shelter is true forever and ever and ever. It always has been, it is, and it will be true forever. So in this way, I should read the verse. The demigods pray, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favor. And we know who the hardest person to be truthful to is. To one's own self. And the truth is that we are tiny, insignificant, ridiculous, fallen, faulty souls. And yet, we are proud. And even if we get some humility, we become proud of how humble we are. This is the nature of illusion. Your faith, indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favor, which is therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. You are the active principle, the real truth, and all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you are known as Antayami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone, for all time. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering you our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. So the point being that when Vyasadeva offers his obeisances to the Param Satyam Dhimahi, to the Supreme Absolute Truth, he's talking about Krishna, who is known as specifically as Satyam Param, and his name is Satya. Okay, we'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments?
Could you give us an example of how Krishna directly and recognizes everything?
That everything emanates from Krishna. And just as, so everything in that sense is part of the body of Krishna. And just as when something happens to our body, we directly experience it, right? Yeah, give it a good squeeze. You directly experience it, right? But also you indirectly experience it too, by looking at it. You're looking at it. So you squeeze yourself, so you're experiencing it directly and indirectly, right? You're looking at yourself doing it. Say if you gave this one a pinch, you would only indirectly experience that you're pinching him, right? But he would directly experience it. But when you do it to yourself, you directly and indirectly experience whatever happens to your body, like that. So Krishna, since nothing is separate from Krishna, he is simultaneously aware of everything by his potency of the witness of everything, of the super soul, and he's also simultaneously directly aware. He's experiencing everything because nothing is different from him. If you're thinking... Yeah, no. If you, no, right. And he's simultaneously, directly and indirectly aware of everything. And Prabhupada, there's one sentence where Prabhupada explains that. Gives a nice hint on that one. Anyone find it? Read it.
The complete whole or the absolute truth is the source of everything. Nothing can be independent of the absolute truth. Whatever happens to the body quickly becomes known to the embodied.
Yes. Whatever happens to the body becomes known to the embodied. The embodied means the person within the body, the soul. So the soul becomes aware of everything that happens to the body in both ways. Yeah.
Is it a direct and indirect knowledge? Is it implicit in the word abhijit?
No, that's anvyadit ras. Or sometimes this uses anvyad vyatirek, direct and indirect. Abhigya, that's the summary of that. Abhigya means all knowing. Yes, you're right, it's implicit in that, yes. But all knowing, but you could know everything directly. But he knows everything directly and indirectly. Because he is everything and he's the observer of everything.
What does it mean to invoke a Gayatri mantra? And later on it talks about the Gayatri.
is mentioned in the Padma Purana.
Yes. So I want to understand a little.
That's the Dimayi. I believe it's the and there are certain elements, which technical elements, that make this a Gayatri mantra or a part of it. I'm not sure if it's part of it or in it, but it's there.
So
that's the idea. Yes, with a reference, at least a reference to the Gayatri mantra.
And in the second verse,
I think Gayatri mantra has to do with meter also. So there's something a little technical in there, which is Prabhupada doesn't explain very much about.
In the second last paragraph
of the purport.
Yes. The edition of Prabhupada Thakur specifically deals with the original and pure sex psychology, otherwise devoid of all mundane inebriety. What does this paragraph refer to in the verse?
This the last three paragraphs aren't direct commentaries on the verse, but there's two relevances. One is that unless one understands, and this part comes up earlier, that the illusion is based on the reality, then unless one accepts, it's a criticism of the impersonalists who say that the Leela of Krishna is composed of Maya, and therefore when someone doesn't accept the truth of the spiritual dealings in Braja, rather than becoming absorbed in impersonalism, they just really get deeply absorbed in the illusion, because it's more powerful and more attractive, especially the dealings between men and women are more powerful and attractive than meditating on the impersonal. So therefore Prabhupada makes the point that the lack of acknowledgement of the spiritual realm where this adiras exists is indirectly the cause of the degradation of contemporary civilization. Because and you can see this, that the more that people think that everything is illusion, that nothing truly exists and nothing really matters, rather than becoming detached from the illusion, they become more and more implicated in it. As Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita, although they say everything is illusion, they become very expert in enjoying that illusion. Because what else do they have to do? And after all, it doesn't make any difference, because it's all illusion, so I can do anything I want, and it's just illusion. There's no good, there's no bad.
There's no substance.
Yes, that's what they said. So therefore, impersonalism, in this way, adds to the degradation of the world by not acknowledging that the real thing exists over here, somewhere else. But now, because I'm contaminated, living the illusion, I can't get there, so let me get rid of the contamination so I get to the real place of enjoyment. So the impersonalists just rather say, there is no real place, and this is all illusion. So what happens is they have to act in this world of illusion. That they call it illusion, but they have to eat, they have to sleep, they have to do things. So they become implicated in the illusion. That's what it means. So, yeah, there are a few paragraphs at the end, possibly three or so. One of them was where Prabhupada talked, the last one where Prabhupada talks about the results of studying the Bhagavatam. And he speaks about this adirasa. And then also he speaks about showing the authenticity of the Bhagavatam. So they're all not directly on the verse, but they're of other importance.
Are functional deities to the demigods?
Yes.
So you can get rid of karma, jnana, and demigods.
Which is those are the three modes of material nature, as far as I saw.
Simply karma, jnana, jnana, and upasana.
Yeah. Yes.
Huh? Does that
seems. Because sometimes it says that demigod worship is the mode of goodness. In Bhagavad Gita it describes that.
Was it the second verse in the 10th canto?
Second chapter. I think it's the 26th verse, what Krishna is called, Satyam.
Just the three modes of material activities rather than the three modes of material.
Three kinds. Well, but there's a connection between that as well. Yes?
Connected to the reference to the Gayatri Mantra. Prabhupada writes, yesterday, therefore gives the reader the chance to gradually develop spiritual realization before actually relishing the essence of the pastimes of the Lord. Therefore, he purposely invokes the Gayatri Mantra.
To elevate one. To elevate one, because before one can go to Goloka Vrindavan, one has to become purified and free from the lesser modes of material nature, passion and ignorance, and become situated in goodness, and then from goodness elevated still further. So this helps. This is what is described here. It's, yeah.
That truthfulness of ourself, you mentioned pride. Is that when we think that we're better than others? And
so many prides, so many things. We're proud of that. So what's the lie in that? Is that even if we have some ability that is better than another's, it's not our ability, it's Krishna's given it to us, but we want to say it's me, it's mine. We are proud of our borrowed plumes. And then by the end of our life, we will have nothing to be proud about because we'll lose everything. So then what's actually ours will become clear to us. Nothing. So, but yet, in illusion, we're proud. And rather, we should become humble. Yes?
In relationship to the Gayatri Mantra.
Yeah.
Also, understanding that part of the purport is, and the reason of putting it in the Gayatri Mantra in the verse was that you have to become qualified to chant the Gayatri Mantra, and then you can attain the transcendental platform, which is what Prabhupada says there, and then you could become thoroughly accomplished in transcendental knowledge, and then you can understand the pastimes of the Lord, which is what the Bhagavatam gives in, especially in the 10th canto.
Leading to the 10th canto. There are wonderful, there's all pastimes of the Lord throughout the Bhagavatam, but they are meant to lead us to the smiling face of the Lord.
So in the purport there, in the paragraph on the Gayatri Mantra, you mentioned at the beginning of the 10th canto, and how you have to be qualified to hear that. And then, so like we always say, you go through the Bhagavatam.
Step by step. Yeah. But yet, Prabhupada also gave us the Krishna book so early, because he wrote it in a way that we will not be illusioned into mistaking Krishna's pastimes as material. So one has the qualification is to be able to recognize, one has to be quite deeply realized to recognize the activities that Krishna does, janma karma shamed divyam evam yogati tatvada, that those, just knowing that alone is sufficient, deeply in tatvata and truth, to free us from the material world.
On that point, it seems like someone with the Asadaga Lakshana Prabhupada, the Krishna book, they have the ability to reach down and give something, which is really, like to give the Gayatri Mantra in the first verse, out of mercy, to give some means of
to the effort. Yes. Yeah. You had Mr. Sarup.
The essence of Gayatri Mantra, the very beginning of first verse, the Gayatri Mantra means the taking of all
takes a taking of shelter. Okay, yeah.
Could you explain what it means that in order to reach the very substance, one must proceed gradually by developing knowledge of the categories?
And the line before that is, the Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all of these because it aims at the supreme truth, which is the substance or the root of all categories. Categories means of everything else. Categories of existence, different categories of existence. So Krishna, the absolute truth, is the source of everything else. Huh? Just right above. The sentence above, two sentences, one sentence above what you read. Yes? And then from Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance, that means Krishna, as well as the categories, everything that emanates from Krishna. Because the substance is the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, and all emanations are relative forms of His energy. So everything that one can't just understand Krishna separate from His energies. One has to understand Krishna through His energies. We have to understand the greatness of Krishna by understanding His relationship with the material world. And we have to understand the dealings of Krishna with His devotional energies, His devotees. And this is what the Bhagavatam describes. So it systematically describes all the categories of Krishna's energies, both the material and the spiritual, to lead us to understanding Krishna and developing our love and devotion for Him. Because He's lovable. And when He demands our surrender, it is not for His good, it is for our good. Because we are His by our very natures. We can't be separate from Him. Because He's the absolute truth, we can't be separate from Him. So to awaken our natural relationship with Him is the process of bhakti. And the goal of that is bhakti. Okay, I stop now. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. So tomorrow, the second.